Okay, the first argued case this morning is number 17-1451, Par Pharmaceutical Incorporated against Horizon Therapeutics. Mr. Berge.
Good morning. May it please the court, Aziz Berge on behalf of Par Pharmaceutical. Your Honors, the central dispute in this case is whether the prior art taught the limitation mean conversion of about 60%. In evaluating whether that limitation is found in the prior art, the board committed multiple legal errors. First, the board failed to consider the prior art as a whole. Instead, it used an unprecedented balanced picture test. Under that newfound test, the board ignored rates, conversion rates at or below 60%, thereby creating a false dichotomy of right and wrong.
Isn't another way of looking at it is that the board precisely did consider the art as a whole, so that when you pointed to the 1919 article by Sherwin, it said, well, we really need to know what 60 years later, 70 years later or something, a skilled artisan would have thought about that in context of the overall prior art. And by then, indeed, 14 years later, there was pretty good reason to discount that 1919 piece.
No, Your Honor. What they did was they did a balancing. And under this court's precedent, that's not the appropriate test. It's not a balancing. It's not a weighing of the evidence.
Well, you're not saying never. Doesn't it really depend on the issues as they arise in the case?
They do, Your Honor, but that's not what happened in this case. In this case, they didn't look at the prior art as a whole. The requirement is to look at all art, irrespective of when it's published. You're supposed to look at the prior art as a whole from earlier to up until the time of the priority date.
What
and that's
do
not
have
what happened
that
here.
What supports you in that prior art other than, what is it, Sherwin 19,
yes.
What do we have other than Sherwin 19 that supports a conversion rate of about 60%?
Sure. So, as Your Honor alluded to, Sherwin 19 itself discloses conversion rates of 50 to 60%, which overlap 67%.
For one individual.
I'm sorry?
For one individual.
That is correct. With respect to other art, there was also the Compte reference, which discloses PA conversion of 54%. And notably, the Compte reference was published in 2002.
For another compound, right? It's not the same compound.
It's part of the claimed compounds in this case, Your Honor.
Look, can I ask a different question about Compte?
Sure.
Where precisely before the board did you rely on Compte for this proposition?
For purposes of the grounds that we advanced?
For purposes of showing a conversion rate more like the one that is claimed here. I was struck, I guess, by I'll call it a fact, but you can tell me if I'm wrong about that. In your 17 or 18 page recitation in the blue brief about your affirmative case of obviousness, you, I think, very carefully referred to Compte once only in a footnote, made me think maybe, and I don't think the board really talked about Compte on the conversion rate principle. So I guess my question is, did you, and if so, show me where in your petition, say, look at the conversion rate in Compte, we rely on that?
We do disclose and rely upon the Compte reference. That's part of the instituted grounds. And specifically with respect to the board relying on it, they did make a factual finding that the Compte reference does disclose a conversion rate of about 53-54%. But the error that the board made is they did not apply the teaching in Compte with respect to its obviousness analysis.
Where in the board opinion does it discuss Compte?
That is found
–
It's at Appendix 17, spanning Appendix 18, Your Honor. So the issue here is that the board failed to address the prior art as a whole. That was the first error. Under this court's precedent in Iron Grip and Tyco, if there is prior art that discloses the claim range, then the board is obligated to apply the presumption of obviousness. And that's what they failed to do in this case, thus leading to the second error.
But wait, come back to the question of what you had in the record here that supported you. You mentioned Sherwin 19 and Compt. Is there anything beside those two?
So there's Kasimov as well, Your Honor. Kasimov uses the data that was in Compt, but it was published in a separate journal. It was published in 2004, which actually postdates all of the prior art references that patent owner relies on in this case. So with respect to the board's findings about Sherwin or their lack of use of Sherwin being earlier in time, that's not appropriate because later references do disclose an incomplete conversion, and specifically the 53 and 54%.
But what the board is saying is that the overwhelming view was that there was 100% or near 100% conversion rate, right? That was what they concluded.
That's what they mentioned, but again, that error stems from the fact that they didn't consider the prior art as a whole. Had they looked at other art, they would have seen lower conversion rates. And specifically,
other art, you mean Sherwin 19 and Compt, right?
Sherwin 19, Compt, and Kasimov definitely disclose incomplete conversion rates. The other issue to compare...
Suppose they look at the entirety, which they seem to have done, and say the overwhelming view was 100%, and under these circumstances, these two references don't render it obvious. Are they not entitled to do that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat your question?
They found isolated references, one of which was very old, suggesting a lower conversion rate, one perhaps in the area of 60%. But they said that the overwhelming view in the art was 100%. Are they not entitled to conclude from that the art would not have suggested using a 60% rate?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, just because we do have other references that disclose lower conversion rates. And more importantly, there are legal safeguards that this court has put in place with respect to looking at the prior art as a whole when the obviousness analysis is conducted. And specifically, as Your Honors well know, in the Iron Grip case, once there is a claim range that is found in the prior art, then the burden of production shifts over to patentee to provide evidence with respect to teaching away or criticality of that range. And with respect to teaching away, the board found that there was no teaching away. They rejected patent owners' teaching away arguments.
You've been making much out of this presumption. I gather you're telling us that we presume it obvious even though there's no evidence of obviousness. I don't see you drawing any distinction between the shifting of the burdens of production and a presumption. And again, your brief is very heavily loaded with saying you have to presume it obvious even though we have no evidence, or the evidence is only of a range.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, and specifically in our briefing from pages 32 through 50, we do recite our prima facie obviousness analysis, specifically with respect to
That's not a presumption. That's a shifting of the burdens of coming forward.
Understood, Your Honor, but we do, to your question regarding other evidence, we do have other evidence with respect to the obviousness case. The issue becomes the board was obligated to apply that presumption because there were lower conversion rates that were taught. And again, as I alluded to earlier, with respect to teaching away, the board rejected all the teachings away, and there was no evidence with respect to criticality that the patent owner submitted whatsoever in this case. And so,
because you ask us to assume that the burden is on them. And I've been looking for the prima facie case to start with, and all I keep coming upon is saying you're telling us there's a presumption.
We do also have the prima facie case. Like I said, Your Honor, we've made multiple arguments in our brief. One is the presumption, but we've also put forward our prima facie case, obviousness case, in our briefing. So we have that presented on pages 32 through 50 of our brief, as I mentioned. But really, the issue becomes that had the board not disregarded the prior art with lower conversion rates.
They didn't disregard it. They discussed it.
They didn't apply it to their obviousness analysis, Your Honor. That's the error. We're saying that because there was prior art with lower conversion rates, they were obligated to apply the test that's presented, and that's the presumption of obviousness in this case. So with respect to the analysis here, as I alluded to, that's what led to the second legal error that the court committed. They exclusively relied on prior art with higher conversion rates without properly regarding and giving credit to conversion rates with lower conversion rates. I'd like to shift real quickly and address one other issue that patent owner has raised in their red brief, and that is with respect to their argument that the Rousselot 91 does not teach any of the limitations in the independent claims with respect to calculating an effective dose. And contrary to the patent owner's argument, Rousselot 91 does teach calculating an effective dose based on conversion of the drugs to PAGN. Dr. Sonheimer, who's the only expert of record in this case, provided expert testimony that the dose in each period in Rousselot 91 was calculated based on such conversion. And the board made those findings with respect to the calculations at Appendix 15 and 16 in this case. And specifically with respect to the board's finding, the board at Appendix 15 goes through its analysis to show that the patient's protein intake was used to calculate the required waste nitrogen, and then that waste nitrogen was used to calculate the target urinary PAGN, which is one of the elements in claims 1 and 8. And then that target urinary PAGN was used in turn, in other words, performing a series of calculations to calculate the doses of PAA, prodrug to be administered.
Can I just ask you, maybe when you get up on rebuttal, you can point me to the pages in your petition where you make a specific argument based on COMPT.
I can provide that on rebuttal, yes, Your Honor. Thanks. I just don't have that handy. And so for those reasons, Your Honor, we respectfully ask that this court reverse the board's finding with respect to obviousness.
Thank you. We'll save your rebuttal time. Mr. Green.
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Green on behalf of Horizon. Let me start by...
So you got a 101 problem here, right? It's not exactly involved because it's a board proceeding and an IPR, but you got a 101 problem. This looks an awful lot like a Mayo patent, right?
I would say it's distinguishable. In fact, it requires not only a determination of a dose, but a treatment that's then made to the UCD patient based upon that dose. There's an active step that's required in this. It's more than just a calculation. It's actually a requirement for the treatment.
Is there pending litigation in district court about 101?
The litigation related to this actually was filed in the Eastern District of Texas. That has been stayed pending the outcome of this proceeding. There was an allegation made of a 101 issue by PAR in that case. It's not going to trial, and it's been stayed.
There's a potentially interesting issue here under the decision in Praxair about the relationship between 101 and 103. It's not been raised here. You're familiar with Praxair?
In general, yes, Judge. Yeah, we do not believe that there's a 101 issue here in view of the fact that there's more than just a thought process that's involved. This is no different than any other treatment claim in the pharmaceutical industry, where there is a determination made as to the dose, and the dose is then applied. And that's exactly what's happening.
Okay, I don't mean to take up your time with that, but 101 is not involved.
It is not in this case at this time. That's right. At the district court, that's a different issue to be dealt with by the judge at a future time. So let me address a few things here. First, I mean, clearly, the board spent a lot of time looking at the underlying references, and they came to a conclusion. And that conclusion was that the state of the art that was used in the petition by Parr was not representative of the art at the time, the pertinent time. That was a fact finding by the district court. And I'd say that alone was the basis then for moving forward with the decision that was made by the board. They looked at the references, and if you go, for example, to one of the references.
I understand very clearly what the board said at your urging about Sherwin 1919. Yes. What did the board say about Compt?
They said very little, other than the fact they acknowledged that it existed. There was no real effort made by Parr to emphasize the teaching of Compt.
Right, there's a reason for that. I just saw in the petition there's a single sentence footnote, I think, on page 111 of the appendix, and that's all. But nevertheless, Compt has this percentage in it that's lower than 60.
Well, it's a lot lower than 60, right? Yeah. I think the reason why...
And it involves several different kinds of compounds, but there's no board analysis to say... There's board analysis saying, if you look at Sherwin 33, I can discount Sherwin 1919. I don't see a counterpart to that in the board's discussion of Comp, which, aside from everything else, is much more recent.
Yeah, I would agree there is no specific discussion, but the board did point out when it first addressed Comp that there was more to Comp than simply testing that they needed to look at. Sure, there was an 8-hour time frame during which they collected the sample. Not 24. 24 is a standard in the art. And in fact, the testimony from the expert, Dr. Sondheimer, in this matter, was that the values that were set forth in Compt did not relate to a 24-hour process, and that there was continued flow, if you will, of the glycerol phenylbutyrate that was still coming out at the 8-hour time frame. And inherently, I think all that happened here is the board looked at this and said, well, what good is this data point? It was admitted that the testing actually had not been done over what was then accepted to be a 24-hour period. The existence of the conjugate that occurs after the administration of a PAA prodrug takes some time. And there's a reason why you see in the references the vast majority, if not all, other than this, go to a 24-hour time frame.
And the expert declaration that you were just talking about is your expert declaration?
No.
The patent owner response? No.
It was a patent owner's, right. And at that, I'm confused.
Whose expert was this?
It was Parr's.
Parr's.
Parr's expert, yes.
At a reply stage? No, it didn't submit any expert testimony at the reply stage. With its petition or what?
Yeah, with the petition, Judge.
Okay.
It did.
In your patent owner response, did you have anything either in your lawyer's document or your expert document addressing Compt?
We did not have an expert to address it, but we did address, for example, Dr. Sondheimer's declaration. It's Appendix 175, where he specifically said the summed value of what was determined to have been the result of the administration of the drug understates excretion. this is their expert that says it understates.
I see. So you just relied on their expert, and then did they come back and in their reply, in again their lawyer's document and their reply, and address that about Compt?
The only issue that they addressed was there was testimony during a deposition by Dr. Sonheimer that he thought his view, unsupported totally, was that, well, it really had tapered off. Well, indeed, it did taper off, but it was still being reviewed on an ongoing basis until they stopped at 8 hours. And at that point in time, there still was PAA or PAGN that was being determined at that point to exist. The other problem, though, with Compte is the value here. The value is not 54. The value is actually 32.6. That's the conversion to PAGN. That's what we're talking about here, Judge. They found, for whatever reason in the testing that they did, they found another agent, PBGN, which was also determined to exist at that time. The data points in here, as I said, they're not substantive. They don't have support based upon normal approach to doing a study like this. The dosing of this was 5 grams. If you look at the art that's in the record, the again, Dr. Sonheimer, when he was addressing the data points, going back actually to Simmel, going back to the 2019 version, showed that there was... there were 4 data points, and what Dr. Sonheimer said was the only ones that I considered to be useful, in essence, were those that were based on 10 and above, the 2 data points at 10 and 15. So when they were back and looking at the underlying prior art from from Sherwin 19, their own expert said, I need to look not at the 5 gram dose, I need to look at the 10 and above, and that's what they looked at. So the other problem here, and I assume the obviously the board is made up of underlying experts in this field as well, the board looks at this and says, well, what are we supposed to do? The 24-hour time frame wasn't used. It was cut off before we could determine how much was determined to exist. We look at the data here, and it's not the 54 that they're asserting it to be. It's in the 36 range. And inherently, if you're a person of ordinary skill in the art, you see that teaching of Compte, I think you simply set it aside.
What did the board say about Compte in the initiation decision?
My recollection is they did not rely. Compte was part of the decision to move forward, but there was really no discussion with respect to... They had in the decision to institute a statement about what Compte was, but that was it. There was no discussion about why they were in, why Compte was actually included in that, other than the fact that was requested by PAR at the time. So they did consider it. It was part of the institution decision.
And in requesting institution, what did PAR say about Compte?
In my recollection, Your Honor, they said essentially nothing other than the footnote, which appears in their response. Again, I think Compte is a red herring, and Kazimov is data.
Well, I mean, the problem
comes from
is
Compte.
That
yes.
maybe Compte could be dismissed. The problem is that it wasn't really addressed by the board.
Well, it was considered, though, Your Honor. And clearly, if you look at their final written decision, they refer to it as part of the institution decision on ground one. They captioned their determination on that decision by saying that Compte is part of it. And what they said was basically what Horizon set forth was evidence that the values that were being used at the critical time were those that were in the 90 to 100 range. And what they also relied on was when you look at the references that were involved that they relied on, such as Sherwin 33, the buphenyl label, and our position, on Schiphol 22, which was a reference that they brought to the table, we argued in each of those cases, Sherwin 33, there was a 24-hour time frame, 95% conversion. Schiphol, their reference, 95% conversion. And Bufinil, which Parr indicates shouldn't be given any consideration whatsoever, of course, is a label that was set forth based on standards from the FDA. So to say that there should be no credit given for what's on the Bufinil label, I think is ignoring the fact that it actually was endorsed by the FDA. So Parr addressed none of that. None. We put those issues on the table, and what did they say to PTAB? Nothing on those points during the proceeding. And what was the board supposed to do at that point? They took a look then at the prior art. They saw the prior art that was relied upon by Horizon, saw that this was timely, decided to decide the case on that basis, and in fact said very specifically, Parr took no position on these. Another point, which I think is quite important in this case, if you look at the prior art as a whole, and the question really is, what was a POSA going to look at? Well, go back and take a look at Brucelot 647 patent, 1980. What's he cite to? Does he cite to Schiphol? I'm sorry, to Sherman 19? He does, but only for a totally different proposition than the conversion rate of PAA to PHEN. Instead, what's he cite to for that purpose? Sherwin 33. And what's he say? There was a conversion rate of 95% shown in Sherwin 33. He also points to that purpose clearly to establish the database that he was then using in the testing at that point. And you can't ignore the fact that he was an expert. He is the one that actually came to the forefront and established the use of PAA prodrugs or PAA itself to treat UCD. He is the icon in that. And for him to ignore specifically Sherwin 19's teaching and instead to point to Sherwin 33, I think tells anyone of skill in the art that Sherwin 19, as we have argued but was not adopted by the board, in fact is a reference which would not have been considered at the time of the invention to be telling with respect to exactly what the, at the time, PAA to PHEN conversion rate would have been. I can't imagine anyone that would have a better set of background credentials than Saul Brucelot himself. There are many other issues, Your Honors. I see I'm down to 46 seconds or so that I would like to address, but if you have any specific questions in my short time left, I would be pleased to address those.
More questions? Any more questions? Well, thank you, Mr. Green.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Berge.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Toronto, with respect to your question about citations to Compt, we did cite Compt, as you mentioned, on Appendix 111, in addition to in our petitioner's reply at pages 20, Appendix pages 2298, also Appendix pages 2306 through 2308. Judge Dyke, with respect to Your Honor about a different drug, the drug in Comp is sodium phenylbutyrate. It is a prodrug of PAA, and that's what's claimed in the 012 patent. And specifically, there's an explanation regarding that at Appendix 165. Judge Newman, with respect to your question about Sherwin and the fact that it was earlier in time and what the board said about Sherwin 19, that doesn't take away from the fact that there was no discrediting of Sherwin 19. Specifically, the board made a specific finding that Sherwin 33, that patent owner relies upon, did not discredit Sherwin 19. So from that perspective, Sherwin 19 is still good prior art. And as I mentioned earlier, is consistent. The later prior art has disclosures of PAA conversions that are consistent with the Sherwin 19 reference. And absent any teaching away, any discrediting, or any other unexpected results with respect to the claim range, it's error for the board to discount and disregard the Sherwin 19 reference. The other thing I'd like to mention regarding Sherwin 33, which is what the patent owner relies upon, that reference does not measure PAGN conversion, which is the claim limitation in this case. What it measures is PAA, and that's different than what's recited in the patent claim. So from that perspective alone, that's not even art that should be considered, and we have made that argument all along, and we did make that argument down below. And specifically, those are at appendix pages 2303 through 2306. I think that's all I have, unless your honors have any further questions.
Any more questions? No, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Responded to these points, and thank you. Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.